Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You're listening to continuing coverage in the Suitcase Murder, The Trial of Sarah Boone, from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
William J. for the state.
James Owens on behalf of Sarah Boone.
Tony Henderson, Sarah Boone.
Kevin Beck, Sarah Boone.
I do.
Ma'am, good morning. Can you please state your full name and date of birth for the record for me?
Sarah Boone, 101077.
All right. Ms. Boone is seated at counsel's table, wearing a black suit and a pink blouse. She is in custody in this matter. However, there are no restraints that are affixed to her person, so we will be standing when our jury enters and exits. Before we bring in our jury this morning, yesterday the court had reserved on a Richardson hearing regarding Exhibit 2 as identified in the defendant's fifth amended reciprocal discovery exhibit list, specifically 119 pages of records from Advent Health Winter Park that were provided to the state yesterday morning by way of USB drive. Yesterday, the court had ordered that the defense was to provide an edited version of only the records pertaining to anxiety and the lack thereof, or anything pertaining to those matters, but before 9 a.m. this morning. Was that done, Mr. Owens?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Jay, have you had the opportunity to review the culled down list of 119 documents?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What is remaining of those 119 specific JPEG images, and what do they pertain to?
Your Honor, most of them deal with just billings, observations by the medical personnel, so on, that don't necessarily apply to the issue of anxiety, as the court had indicated. I did include certain pages that discuss depression issues, as I believe that they were related to anxiety, and then I've identified 4 or 5 other pages that are not anxiety related, but maybe the case. I described that.
Of those 119 images, how many are being sought? 15? Okay, thank you. State response.
Apparently, these are all just related to a January 23rd, 2018 admission at Advent Health Winter Park. So it appears they're not seeking to introduce any records from other instances that were contained in the records that were first disclosed to the state on September 27th.
You speak of the 81 pages?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Nor the new 119 pictures that still not in a PDF form. Of the 15 pages, the first two that they list are pages 9 and 10 out of 111, and I believe I've identified them as best I can. However, the Bates stamp from the hospital is over other text, and there is no other Bates stamp, so I'm guessing that it's pages 9 and 10 out of 111. It appears to just be a health information sharing sheet, like a contract. I don't understand the relevance of those two pages. Pages 21, and then they skip 22, 23, 24, and 25 are all part of her initial assessment on 123.18. We don't object to those pages, but for, and I apologize that there is a but for, the fact that at the bottom of page 25 begins her toxicology screening, and that does go into page 26. And they did not indicate that they want to use page 26. However, without page 26, we are going to experience relevancy issues and a 403 objection from the state. And that is because in her toxicology screen, for which she is coming to the treatment to seek treatment for depression symptoms, she is at 165 for ethanol. Meaning When converted, it's 0.165 grams per deciliter, over twice the legal limit. It's a central nervous system depressant. We are going to have at least one medical doctor, well, two. The forensic pathologist will testify for the state, and then our expert on battered spouse syndrome, if we get to that point, is also a medical doctor. She's a psychiatrist, not a psychologist. Will tell us that ethanol is a central nervous system depressant. I believe even the psychologist will be able to get that information in. So we are objecting to pages 21 through 25 coming in without page 26.
If I understand your argument, is it a rule of completeness issue?
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that it applies to documents as opposed to statements. I mean, it is an out-of-court statement, so it is a rule of completeness issue, particularly when the symptoms and the complaints of the patient on that particular day were crying and being depressed and showing signs of using a central nervous system depressant. The rest of the tox screen, pages 27 and 28, they did not list. We are not complaining that they are not including that. Page 29 is another page they listed. That's more of a narrative about her visit at January 23rd, 2018. We do not object. Page 43 is just her vital signs. We don't object. Page 44 is more of the initial assessment on this January 23rd, 2018 visit. We do not object, nor do we object to pages 45, 46, or 47.
What are pages 45, 46, and 47, just for my own?
More of this initial assessment of January 23rd, 2018 was my understanding. Page 48, we are asking again that this be included. I don't believe it's super mysterious why we are going from pages 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, and then skipping page 48, and then going to 49, but we do want page 48 included. On that page includes her height and weight at the time. Page 63.
What's 49? So seemingly that's included.
49 is just some results. Again, it's misleading and doesn't provide full context without what I've described as page 26, because part of the results on page 49 show that she was tested for the presence of ethyl alcohol or ethanol, but it doesn't give the results.
Are the results contained in another page?
Just on page 26, the one I've previously described as wanting included.
So not following 49 to 50 or 51 sequentially?
No, because the pages they want from the 40s are 43 through 47, skipping 48, and we're asking for 48 to be included between 47 and 49 to make sure it's relevant and complete.
But they are also seeking 49, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Just they just skipped 48, just like they skipped 26.
Okay.
page 63, it appears to be repetitive, but we don't have any particular objection to page 63 of the 111. Page 108 seems to be another part of the initial assessment from January 23rd, 2018, so we don't object to that. So basically, we're asking for pages 26 and 48 to be included.
Okay, thank you. The state did seek a Richardson hearing yesterday in this matter, and based on binding precedent by the Sixth District Court of Appeal, Young v. State, 369 Southern 3rd, 1243, regardless of the culling down of the records, the court still is required to conduct a Richardson hearing. As to the issue of whether the defendant's violation was inadvertent or willful, Mr. Owens had advised that these documents were obtained sometime last week. He was unable to provide any specificity. He's going to confer with his office. Mr. Owens or Mr. Beck, are you in a position to advise when these documents were first requested, when they were received, and when they were sent to the state, specifically any documents pertaining to Exhibit 2, the Advent Health Winter Park records?
Judge, I did check with my secretary, Margaret, and my understanding is I didn't know that was going to be a question about when we actually sent it out. I know it was one of my trips down here. I got Sarah Boone to sign a medical release. We sent it to the hospital. It took a couple of weeks, I want to say. We got it last week. We don't know exactly when. We don't timestamp at our office when something is mailed in, and it was mailed in from the hospital to my office. For whatever reason, the records did not get to Shelby, who was handling that issue, until late, and I think it was yesterday or the day before, that she was aware that they had not been disclosed. We provided the copy to the state at that time.
So did these records come in batches? Because my understanding, based on the state's representation and their objections, was that the first 81 pages came on September 27th. Those were provided.
Those were separate. Those were records that some of the other lawyers, one of the other lawyers, had received. And we sent them on, but the problem was they had notes on them. So we sent that 81, but it wasn't directly from the hospital. So we were trying to get a more complete, unedited a copy of the records. That's why we made our request.
Okay, and when was the error identified in time as to when these items were not sent, such that they were provided via USB yesterday?
Whatever date we gave them is when we realized there was an error, that same day.
Okay, my understanding that would have been yesterday morning.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else, sir?
If I may, real quickly, based on the invoice that was sent from the our Advance Billing Department, apparently it's a separate subcontractor. The request was made on the 27th of September. I suspect they waited until they received confirmation of payment of $135 for the receipt of those, so we received those. So it's all been within a couple of weeks. Plus, we had the hurricane issue last week, and so I think there were issues as to the matter being provided for. I did speak with the state yesterday afternoon after I had a chance to look at the record, and advised them essentially what these matters were in relationship to, and was told that they already had those records and communicated with them. So I don't think there was any prejudice to the state based on our submission.
Okay. Any further argument or positions with regard to the Richardson analysis, Mr. Jay?
That's for the purpose of this hearing, I'd like this stack of documents.
Is that the 119 pages, sir?
No, sir. It's the 81 pages that we got on September 27th, 2024.
Any objection? All right. What was pre-marked A for the purposes of the Richardson hearing will be received without objection as states one.
There was just a reference that 81 pages were all marked up by the defense. There's no markings. The issue and the confusion that the state attorney's office still has, though, is page 68 of 81 of these original 81 documents.
If you have a cell phone on, they need to be silenced and turned off, please. If you cannot follow the court's instructions, due to the publicity in this case, I will ask for you to be removed. Does everyone understand? Thank you. You may proceed.
And I realize that I've only had a limited amount of time to review the 119 pages that came in yesterday. And again, it's more difficult to review those because it's not in a PDF where I can word search it and do any of the things that are afforded to us with modern technology. It came in as 119 separate JPEGs. They're not in order. So for instance, when I'm trying to look for page 43 of those 111 records out of the 119 pages, it's not in order. And I've done my absolute best to try and see if this page, which is 68.
Yes. And referring to 68 of the 81 that was entered as one, correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank
it
you.
Is sublabeled within these records as page 2 of 14, and it appears to be a part of her visit on January 23rd, 2018. And in the social history provided, it says alcohol use denies, tobacco use denies, and the other part isn't relevant. And I just haven't been able to find that, and so I'm asking for the leeway to continue to try and search for that particular page out of the 119, so that I may ask that out of the doctrine of completeness and fairness, that it be included. I'm just, at this point, I have not been able to find anything in the records that says that, and I'm limited in my abilities to cheat with technology and put it, you know, if there's a 119-page PDF and you make it Word searchable, you just put in the magic word, and it helps the attorney greatly. So that's why there's this confusion, and that's part of why I had to raise this issue was just at my first glance of those pages yesterday, I knew that something seemed off compared to what was previously provided.
Okay. Any response?
It has a heading, Your Honor. I'm not familiar with that heading in the documents that I was reviewing. I'll look for it again, and I'll provide information.
Okay. I appreciate y'all working together on that. So here's what we're going to do.
If I may.
Yes.
We had told the state that we would bring in a printed copy, not the PDF, this morning. But Federal Express, which is the block away, for whatever reason, the road was being constructed. So they closed. So we were there at 8 o'clock to get the copy to the state we had promised. But we will bring one at lunch to hand to state.
Okay. Appreciate it. All right. Any other argument with regard to the Richardson issue? Anything further, Mr. Beck? Okay. With regard to, let me conclude the Richardson and Allison's first. All right. Thank you both for your positions and your arguments. The court has, as a matter of law, the court needs to determine whether the defendant's violation was inadvertent or willful. Court finds that based on the positions provided by the defense that the disclosure was inadvertent. But I do find that the violation had some level of substantiality to it. But due to the state's review and the defense compliance with the court's order yesterday as to culling down to the pages that we've identified, the court finds that the violation had a limited ability on the state's ability to prepare for trial due to the lack of objections to the majority of the documents, with the exception of page 48 and 26, which are sought to be included. For those reasons, I find that the prejudicial effect of the substantial disclosure is limited, and I'm not going to order the defense, not going to prohibit the defense from proceeding forward on moving these items into evidence. However, I do want to address the 403 rule of completeness issue with regard to pages 26 and 49 26 and 48 as sought by the state. No objection, Mr. Beck. All right, thank you. So the state's request is granted. Pages 26 and 48 will be included in any evidentiary documents that are sought to be moved into evidence with regard to this January 2018 incident, as provided in the 119 pages of item 2 of the defendant's Fifth Amended Reciprocal Discovery Exhibit List. I will not foreclose the state regarding page 68 of the 81 pages. If they are able to find that additional document, we can address any argument at that time as to why that should be included. Anything further, state, before we bring in our jury?
Judge, the defense team has indicated to me that they intend on using demonstrative aids during opening statement. The ones that I have seen include jury instructions that may not be given and may not be given in the way that the court gives, and photographs that could be coming into evidence. I identified at least one that I don't recognize as something they sought to be seeking into evidence, perhaps two. So I believe we should have a discussion about each and every one of those. They should each be marked for the record purposes by letter so that we can refer to them and make a record. I believe it's in the court's discretion, even though I rarely see it exercised in this way in this circuit, to allow the prospective parties to refer to actual exhibits during opening statements. I would urge the court not to allow that. They're going to see them soon enough, but particularly with what they are seeking to introduce, given the motion in limine ruling that the court has already issued, that at this point in time, the latest proffer with the defendant's testimony is not amounting to an overt act that will result in a self-defense instruction, that will result in prior instances of violence coming in, that it would be extremely prejudicial, dangerous, and to use Mr. Cacciatore's analogy, very impossible to put that toothpaste back in the tube if we amplify our opening statements, which may or may not come to fruition when we start talking about these past instances and battered spouse syndrome, it would be greatly amplified if they're actually seeing exhibits of the defendant's past injuries that she's attributing to the decedent. So I'm asking for us to discuss that.
Response before we go through each photo.
Judge, the defense is self-defense. Sarah's going to testify that she was defending herself. We believe the court's going to rule we're entitled to put on a case involving self-defense. And under the instruction for justifiable use of non-deadly force and the justifiable use of deadly force.
I'm not discussing the jury instructions at this time.
But there are evidence of prior threats of prior events of violence committed under that instruction, under the self-defense justifiable use.
Here's my concern. Why are we addressing law in opening statement?
Well, I agree with the state attorney. I did blow up a couple of these on the justifiable use of non-deadly force.
That still that does not answer my question.
I would agree not to use those.
Okay.
The two I'm interested in using and opening is this standard instruction. It is up to you to decide what evidence is reliable. You should use your common sense in deciding which is the best evidence and which evidence should not be relied upon considering the verdict. You want me to read it out?
No, I can see it, sir.
And the other one is a reasonable doubt is not a possible doubt, speculative, imaginary, or forced doubt is the standard instruction on reasonable.
What's your position with regard to those two, Mr. Jay?
Judge, it's opening statements. We should be discussing what we anticipate to come into the trial, and that's going to be enough of a minefield. It really shouldn't be about the law. We'll both have an opportunity to use the actual jury instructions, which we have not decided upon. We will have the opportunity to use that overhead or any means that we want at the end of the trial during our closings to put up what is actually decided to be the law after the case has been presented. So it's our position that we shouldn't be using demonstrative aids with portions of jury instructions. We're gonna have that opportunity to argue how the law applies to the facts at the end, and we will have the correct version. And if the court is following the tendency that I've seen in this circuit recently, we may in fact read 3/4 of the jury instructions to them before we even begin our closing remarks. I think it's premature and problematic to be doing that at this time, and it's not the role of opening remarks.
Any other response?
Judge, I've been doing this 35 years. I've had these boards. I've used these boards in opening statements. I don't know how many times. I've said that I would waive introducing the one specific to self-defense, but reasonable doubt is an instruction you gave to the jury when we got started, and then this weighing the evidence is a standard jury instruction that applies in every case.
Are those the standard? Is that the language of the standard instruction?
I have not had the opportunity this morning to pull up the Florida Standard Criminal Jury Instructions off the Supreme Court website due to dealing with motions in limine, trying to prepare my opening statement, and doing all the things that I should be doing on the eve of openings. But I did notice that I did not believe the reasonable doubt instruction was complete, just from memory, and I know that's not the complete weighing the evidence instruction either. It's an entire page of instructions for each of those.
Can I see the reasonable doubt instruction, please? Well, here's the first problem. That's the wrong instruction. Florida Supreme Court revised 3.7 earlier this year. That is not the appropriate definition of reasonable doubt. It is not what was read to the jury during jury selection. 3.7 now reads, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and it does not mean proof beyond all doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible, a speculative, imaginary, or forced doubt. Such a doubt must not influence you to return a verdict of not guilty if you have an abiding conviction of guilt. On the other hand, if after carefully considering, comparing, and weighing all the evidence, there's not an abiding conviction of guilt, or if having a conviction, it is one which is not stable, but one which wavers and vacillates, then the charge is not proved beyond every reasonable doubt, and you must find the defendant not guilty because the doubt is reasonable. That does not track the standard jury instruction. For those reasons, I'm not going to allow it.
Judge, I'll have it redone in arguments.
As long as it, I mean, we're still in the process of working through. The 3.7 instruction speaks for itself. I won't preclude you from using enlargements in closing, but for the purposes of opening, because it doesn't track the 3.7 instruction, I'm not going to allow it.
And this is an excerpt from when you...
Give me a moment. That seems to be the standard 3.9 instructions, or at least portions of it. Response?
Again, since it's not all of it, it's misleading. It's highlighting something about the law. When we're just talking about open remarks, opening remarks, 6 through 10 are optional. We haven't decided which out of the optional instructions, 6 through 10, we're going to use in this case, because we have not heard the evidence yet. So I just think it's inappropriate to be delving into pieces and portions of jury instructions before we get the evidence. What we should be doing is explaining to the jury what we believe the facts are going to show and the inferences that they can draw from them, and argue the law later.
Last bite at the apple, sir.
Judge, they've got to have some guidance to the law. You know, that in many ways, we do it where we give them the law at the very end. You know, and I understand the reason for that, depending on the evidence that comes in, but there's standard instructions that are going to apply throughout. And this is just giving them an idea of what their role is in considering the credibility of witnesses. I think it's appropriate. It's a brief statement of a standard instruction that comes in on every case.
Let me move to the photographs before I address the 3.9 issue.
I think for the record, we should mark them.
Okay. Do you want them marked? You want them marked by Madam Clerk, correct? Okay, so let's approach with that first photograph, please. Sure. Madam Clerk, yes. Any other further argument with regard to the use of those items pre-marked as A through I in opening statement, Mr. Owens?
Yes, Judge, and I sent you some cases.
When did you send it, sir? I have not received it. Has the state seen a copy of it?
I'm familiar with the case law. I did receive the email. I'm not sure if it indicated who all was copied on it. A separate one, but I'll check.
Is it just these two cases? I've been provided Alsager v. State, 326 Southern 3rd, 656, Florida Supreme Court, 2021. Lowe v. State, 259, Southern 3rd, 23, Florida Supreme Court, 2018. Yes, sir.
Judge, the court has discretion to allow demonstrative aids. If you look at one or both of those, there was a state wanted to introduce a dummy they were using in a homicide case, which the court allowed. Other cases have allowed photographs and demonstrative aids to be used in opening statements. In the Alcaguer case, which is the 2021 case, Supreme Court, trial court acted within its discretion in permitting state's use of a map as a demonstrative aid during the guilt phase rebuttal closing argument in a capital murder trial, or evidence visually demonstrated on the map was not without support in the record. That was actually an exhibit that wasn't in the record. The 2018 case, Supreme Court of Florida, again, the trial court acted within its discretion in allowing a demonstrative exhibit. In that case, it was a murder prosecution. Trial court acted within its discretion in allowing the state to use a mannequin in a demonstrative aid in order to show the position of the gun in relation to the victim's body. The mannequin was used to set out the circumstances of the crime and to attempt to establish aggravation. The mannequin was used to demonstrate the location of the gunshot wounds, the angle of the impact against the skin, the incapacitating nature of each gunshot wound, advising of the trajectories were anatomical, not spatial, and had a small degree of error where only was slight difference between the victim's size and the mannequin's dimensions. There was nothing to suggest the mannequin was altered to resemble the victim. The court allowed, again, the court's discretion. As you know, we're claiming self-defense, and as part of that instruction, we're entitled to allege prior instances of difficulties and prior acts of violence so that the defendant who asserts self-defense, their state of mind is different from the norm. Sarah Boone, who because of prior threats or difficulties with George Torres, had reasonable grounds to believe that she was in danger of imminent use of unlawful force at the hands of George Torres, you may consider this fact in determining whether the actions of Sarah Boone were those of a reasonable person. Goes on to say, if you find at the time of the alleged second-degree murder, Sarah Boone knew that George Torres had committed an act or acts of violence, you may consider that fact to determine whether Sarah Boone reasonably believed it was necessary for her to use a weapon. We have a good faith belief that the exhibits will be introduced into evidence. They're demonstrative aids to aid the jury in understanding the circumstances surrounding that relationship and the actions that Sarah took and the reasonableness of those actions in light of their history.
Thank you. Any response, State?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Judge, the standard is it is your discretion, and you will only be reversed if you abuse your discretion in this regard. The state is urging you just flat out, as a matter of principle, to not allow the parties to go into the exhibits during opening statements. They're going to be seeing the actual exhibits in the very, very near future. I mean, we can do this. We can play the videos. We can show gruesome autopsy photographs on the big screen as well during opening statements, but those things are all coming. So we're just asking you first in general, let's not extend the opening statements in that regard any more than necessary. Now, our specific objections are this. With A, which is beneath everything now, but the bloody ear from the prior incident, I believe that is from a body-worn camera, and I think he indicated as much it was not from her phone. If we get to that point where we know that this piece of evidence is coming in, that would be one thing, but right now the law of the case is they cannot put on any evidence of prior instances of violence, any reputation evidence regarding the victim, or go into battered spouse syndrome in the evidence until self-defense has been established, and that self-defense must be established by the testimony, and in this particular case it has to come from the defendant, of an overt act taken by the decedent, which resulted in an imminent threat of great bodily harm or death. And we have had that litigation. We have provided the court The most recent testimony regarding the defendant's most recent statements from the two doctors, and it doesn't exist at this time. So it's one thing for the parties to go into things in opening statements that don't end up coming into evidence. And when the defendant does that, well, under King versus State, the state gets to point out, look, they made these promises in opening statements and they didn't come to fruition. So you need to disregard everything that you heard that was going to happen in trial that didn't. But the problem, particularly for the state side, is we don't get to appeal. So if we go through opening statements and we have the jurors not only exposed to our words about things that may or may not be coming into evidence, but exposed to 1,000 words per picture, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, that amplifies the error, and it's an error the state has no remedy to fix. So we're asking for A, which would absolutely come into evidence. If we get this overt act testimony, which has not occurred yet from the defendant, and certainly this is A would come in, and some of the other letters, and there's nothing wrong with them blowing it up like that. In fact, the state has it on their exhibit, and we'll be showing it on the screen as well. There's not, you know, a lot of dispute over whether that will come in if we meet that standard of an imminent act or an overt threat of an imminent act of danger. B, I'm not sure B was on their list of items that they sought to introduce from the phone. We would argue a picture of her with her dogs on her porch doesn't have any relevance. I don't expect that to be coming into trial, so we're objecting on that separate ground. And then returning back to C, D, E, F, G, H, I. State is all aware of those photographs. We are prepared to introduce them ourselves through the digital evidence. There's no hiding those things. If we meet the threshold for this sort of evidence coming in.
Could you identify those for me? I'm trying to keep notes contemporaneously.
Yes. C.
It was C through I inclusive.
Yes.
Thank you.
B is the only one that is not a photograph of prior violence. It's, I don't know, it wasn't on their list of things that they sought to introduce, and I don't know what the relevance would be of her just sitting there on her porch with her dogs. But A and then C through I, judge, absolutely, at the end of the trial, great, blow them up. Use them as much as you want, but in this particular case, with the rulings that the court has already made about this, based on the state's motion in limine, it is very dangerous to allow them to do this when we are not expecting it to be admitted into evidence based on the current state of the defendant's testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Owens, if you could address Exhibit B, it was pre-marked as B.
But Judge, you've already ruled that these things come in and open.
No, what I ruled was is that you were able to discuss them, you address them in opening. Photographs are a totally different kitty.
I said nothing about battered spouse syndrome. I said self-defense. These exhibits come in under self-defense. And arguing these, I've said nothing about battered spouse. I'm talking about self-defense.
I understand.
And prior difficulties, prior acts of violence. The standard instruction.
But the overt act requirement remains. I mean, we've reviewed Holland and read it multiple times.
In good faith, with discussions with my client, we believe there is going to be evidence of an overt act. And she was facing imminent threat, and she reacted based on that threat.
Understood. Your response to Exhibit B?
I'll look at B. Which one's B?
It's the her on the back porch with the two dogs.
Judge, not only did he abuse, George Torres abused.
That's not the issue. The issue is that the state represented that it was not part of your exhibit list.
I believe it is a part of the exhibit list. We got this from the state. They sent over a bunch of pictures of flowers or paintings that they want introduced that they listed as exhibits. I thought for sure we put this on there, but the relevance of it is not only did he abuse Sarah Boone, George Torres, he abused the dogs. And he would threaten to abuse the dogs to control Sarah Boone.
Okay, thank you.
They're checking, Judge.
All right.
On whether they have all those.
The court's prepared to rule at this point in time. Thank you both for your presentations and your argument. The court's had the opportunity to what was pre-marked as A through I inclusive. First, with regard to the portion of the 3.9 instruction, the purposes of opening statement is to set the table of what the issues are, what the parties believe the facts and evidence will show. It is not a proper time to be discussing law or elements of law, and that is an element of law that will be instructed to the jury at the end of the case. So the court's going to exercise its discretion for those reasons and prohibit you from using the portion of the 3.9 instruction in opening statement. You could talk about this is a job that you're going to have, but I'm not going to allow you to read portions of the instruction for those reasons at this time. With regard to what was pre-marked as A through I, the Holland case is clear. Before a defendant may introduce evidence of the victim's character, he must first show that there was an overt act by the victim at or about the time of the incident that reasonably indicated a need for self-defense. I understand your good faith belief. I take no position on whether or not you're going to make it or not. That's something that you're going to have to establish. But the concern is that the photographs, some of them are graphic in nature. The lacerations, the sutures, the bruising, facial wounds with bleeding may have such a impact such that the toothpaste cannot be paste back into the tube, assuming that overt act hurdle is not met. And the court, again, takes no position on whether or not you're going to be able to meet it because I haven't heard the evidence and testimony. So court's going to exercise its discretion for those reasons. You can talk about it. You can talk about it that she was a victim. You can talk about some incidences made happen, but I'm not going to allow the photographs at this point in time for those reasons, for your utilization of them in opening statements. Any questions or clarifications with regards to the court's ruling state?
No, Your Honor.
Defense?
No, sir.
All right. Are we prepared to bring in our jury at this time?
I've got two other issues.
They've been waiting for an hour and 20 minutes, Counselor.
We intend to play the two-minute suitcase video to the jury in opening statement.
State?
Again, I'm asking you to urge your discretion. They're going to hear it in the next 2 days of court. It's within your discretion whether we're going to start using exhibits during opening statement.
What's the other issue, sir?
I need to approach a bench on the
other. Okay. With regard to the video, I'm not going to allow proposed exhibits to be used in opening statements. It's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. If not going to allow your photographs, not going to allow the state to do anything. You can orally talk about what you believe the evidence and testimony is going to show, but the actual evidence is going to have to be presented here through witnesses or through demonstration and publication after that evidence is admitted. Y'all can approach.
While we approach, can somebody from their team start dismantling?
Please, I would appreciate it. Thank you. All right. Any reason why we cannot bring in our jury at this time? State.
No, sir.
Defense.
No, sir.
All right, let's stand and bring in our panel. Good morning, y'all may be seated. State, do you recognize our jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense, do you recognize our jury?
Yes.
All right, can the parties approach for a moment? All right, members of our jury, good morning. I want to just confirm before we start this morning that you complied with the court's instructions last night to not have any conversations amongst yourselves or anyone else about the persons, places, things, or charge involved in this case. And then you have not conducted any independent investigation regarding those items. You just raise your hands to confer that you complied with the court's instructions. All right, the record will reflect that all jurors have raised their hands. Members of the jury, yesterday I told you that you may happen to see the lawyers in the courtroom or in the courthouse going about their affairs. And again, they're not trying to avoid you or speak to you because they're not allowed to. Did anyone happen to ride an elevator this morning with any of the attorneys, either for the state or for the defense? All right, juror in seat number three from my left, first row. Yes, ma'am.
I rode the elevator with
the— Okay, thank you. Can you all approach for a moment? And a juror in seat four, left to right, first row. Yes, sir. Who did you ride the elevator with?
One of the lawyers.
Do you recall who specifically, sir?
I believe it was
Mr. Owens. Okay, thank you. Well, I thank you both for your honesty. I appreciate that. It's something we talked about earlier this week. That's the one thing that we required and asked of you is just be open and honest. And I appreciate both y'all's open and honesty. During the ride in the elevator, was there anything that you saw or observed that it would impacted you or influenced you in any way? Did it have any impact on you? Juror number three, left to right, first row. Juror number four, left to right, first row. Okay, thank you. All right, with that, members of the jury, we're going to proceed with opening statements this morning. Both the state and the defense will have the opportunity to present them. I ask that you listen closely to those statements that they're going to provide. But remember, these are not evidence. This is just the party's belief as to what the facts and the evidence will show in this case. After the conclusion of the opening statements, we'll begin with the state's case in chief through witnesses. With that, Mr. Jay, you may proceed, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, what the evidence in this case is going to show you is that this defendant zipped Jorge George Torres shot in a suitcase. She was able to do this because at the time of his death, he only weighed 103 pounds. And she did this with the malicious intent to punish him. And then she went up to sleep and left him to take his final breaths on this earth alone. How many breaths those were, we don't know. The evidence is going to show that it was at least for about 15 minutes, because there's going to be two videos, that the defendant herself took of this event. The evidence is going to show George Torres is dead because in this defendant's judgment, he deserved it. And out of a conscious disregard for whether he lived or died, you will see and hear these videos. What I expect you will hear from a video that began at 11:12 p.m., 45 seconds, on February 23rd, 2020, in Orange County, Florida, is a suitcase on the ground, face down, with the zippers facing the floor. You will hear Sarah, the defendant will say, "For everything you've done to me." Sarah, "For everything you've done to me." Sarah, "Fuck you." And then the defendant laughs. Sarah, "Fuck you." And the defendant laughs. Sarah, "Stupid." Sarah, "That's my name. Don't wear it out." Sarah, "I can't fucking breathe, baby. Seriously." "Yeah, that's what you do when you choke me." Sarah. Sarah. Sarah, the defendant laughs again. "Sarah, I can't breathe, babe." She laughs again. "That's on you." "Sarah, I can't breathe." She laughs again. Unintelligible words. And I would submit, the evidence is going to show, because of the intoxication from alcohol, is the next thing she says. "Sarah, Sarah. Sarah, I can't breathe, baby. That's what I feel like when you cheat on me. Sarah, fuck you. I can't fucking breathe, Sarah. You should probably shut the fuck up. Sarah, shh," is the last thing you will hear the defendant say to Mr. Torres as he is face down, zipped shut in a suitcase. That, again, began at 11:12:45 and lasts just over 2 minutes. At 11:23:03 p.m., there's a second 22-second video, and it's the defendant zooming in on the suitcase, and all you hear during this 22 seconds, after he's been in this suitcase since at least 11:12 p.m., is one more time, "Sarah." How How did we get to this point where 103-pound George Torres get put into this suitcase left to die? Well, the next morning, the defendant wakes up, late morning, perhaps early afternoon, somewhere in this time range, several hours later. And she goes downstairs, and she doesn't see George anywhere, just Torres, and eventually realizes, oh my God, he's in the suitcase. The first thing she does after taking him out, and I believe you will hear a description by the defendant saying, he took his little legs out. At some point she makes that statement. And tries to resuscitate him. Hears gurgling as she presses down on his 103-pound chest, forcing whatever air was trapped in there out, gurgling. Then the next thing she does is she doesn't call 911. She calls Brian Boone. Who's Brian Boone? Well, Brian Boone is her ex-husband. They share a child in common. And this date, February 24th, 2020, is a Monday. A normal work day for most people. School day for their child that they share in common. But after they got divorced, the arrangement was every other weekend, they'll co-parent. And that weekend included Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's that three schedule. And then Monday through Tuesdays, their child would be her responsibility, and Wednesdays and Thursdays, their child would be Mr. Brian Boone's responsibility. So February 23rd, 2020 was a Sunday, and now we've led into Monday, February 24th, 2020. Mr. Boone had been trying actually to contact the defendant several times that morning, because he just wanted to confirm she was going to get their child after school that day. And there had been a history of reliability issues on that issue on her part. So you will see in the phone record, he calls her and calls her and calls her. Then she finally calls him back instead of calling 911. And being the nice co-parent that he is, he comes over. It's a short drive, about 10 minutes. And as she's explaining to him what the heck is going on, he peeks in through the front door of her townhouse, which allows you a view all the way to the back sliding glass door. You're going to see that her kitchen is off to the right, but there's a doorway that you can see all the way through. And on the back side of the kitchen and the breakfast area, there's tables and stuff. There's also some blue legs sticking out in view. Brian Hoon says, check please. You need to call 911. He doesn't set foot into that townhouse. He does wait outside, though, being the good co-parent that he has to. So now, after having first called her ex-husband, after having first waited for Brian Boone to come over, the defendant makes the 911 call.
What you will not hear are tears. You will not hear sorrow. You will hear a certain level of concern. My boyfriend and I were playing last night. Put him in a suitcase, and we were playing hide and seek kind of thing. I fell asleep. Found him dead in the suitcase this morning. I don't know what happened. He had blood coming out of his mouth. Don't know if it was an aneurysm. Pulled him out of the suitcase, tried to give him CPR. He was in the suitcase and I fell asleep. He's not awake, he's purple, he's not breathing. There's some instructions about how to do CPR given to her, asking about whether an AED is available to shock his heart. It's too late, he's cold, he's stiff, he's purple. We were playing hide and seek.
We were playing hide and seek. This is horrible. This is horrific what happened. Like, what happened? We were playing hide and seek last night and I fell asleep. So she mentions that there was blood coming out of his mouth.
And his body, like all bodies in suspicious deaths, was taken to the 9th District Medical Examiner's Office in autopsy. What the doctor found was what you would expect after being left in a suitcase, crumpled up in the fetal position. He passed from positional asphyxiation, meaning like you're not going to get full breaths when you're crumpled up like an accordion, and environmental suffocation. You don't have to have a plastic bag over your head, tape shut with a full roll of duct tape to seal it off 100% and be worthy of the vacuum of space to environmentally suffocate. It's close enough if you can't get the oxygen and the CO2 coming in and out of your environment. But she also did notice, yeah, he suffered from blunt force trauma on his torso, in his face, his mouth. She'll use words like contusion, will help her explain contusions and bruises. She'll use words like hematomas, will help her understand for you all that that means bleeding under the skin and blood, what you expect from a bruise, that's why they're running through. But he had all this additional trauma.
More continuing coverage in the suitcase murder. The trial of Sarah Boone is on the way from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.